this sort of competition is going to continue, and generally it will work to the advantage of the Chinese side.
Panama cuts diplomatic ties with Taiwan. It's Wednesday, June 14th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. I also invite you to stop by our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a member of Congress wants a new approach to Tibet. Americans come and go in North Korea. Foreign nationals adopted, then deported. Music therapy and digital gamers converge. Stay with us. We're just getting started with VOA Asia. Panama has cut ties with Taiwan and opened diplomatic relations with China. President Juan Carlos Varela said it is the correct path for his country.
Me siento confiado en que se ha llegado el momento adecuado para
que esta relación. The Panamanian leader said he is confident this is the right time for this relationship to be consolidated, and said Panama and Beijing understand the importance of globalization and the responsibility of carrying out the Sustainable Development Agenda of 2010. He also thanked Taiwan as a great friend. A joint communique was signed Tuesday in Beijing between Foreign Minister Wang Yi and Panama's foreign minister. Taiwan now officially has diplomatic relations with 19 countries. Taiwan's Foreign Minister David Lee expressed discontent and sorrow over the decision. Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen attended Mr. Varela's inauguration last year. Taiwan analyst Bruce Jacobs of Monash University in Australia tells VOA's Victor Beatty this trend away from Taiwan and toward the mainland is a vast investment inevitable.
The nationalist regime of Chiang Kai-shek and then later Chiang Ching-kuo claimed that Taiwan was part of China and that the regime in Taiwan was competitor with that of China. So that perspective is an old colonial perspective that had no reference whatsoever to the people of Taiwan. It's my feeling that, you know, this sort of competition is going to continue, and generally it will work to the advantage of the Chinese side. And what Taiwan needs to do is to proclaim that it's an independent, separate country. It is not part of China. And I think in the ultimate, that would work out for the best for Taiwan. I mean, many countries have de facto one China, one Taiwan policies, including the United States, Australia, Canada, the major European countries, even India. And they have officially unofficial relations with Taiwan. And I think these can be upgraded. And eventually we'll have a situation where Taiwan is accepted as a member of the international community in a formal way.
One report said that this comes after China has been showering largesse on countries throughout Central America in recent years.
China has been showering lots of largesse, not only in Central America, but around the world, in places like Venezuela, but also in places like Africa and places of Asia. So this isn't anything new. The Chinese have a fair amount of money, and they're using it to try to influence many countries. I mean, we recently had a big investigation that showed how much Chinese money was coming into Australia. And to some extent, it was buying some influence.
Cutting diplomatic ties or switching them, switching allegiance from Taiwan to China, does it really matter?
Not really, but I mean, it does aggravate some people in Taiwan, and people in China sort of see it as a victory. I don't think it ultimately matters, but some of the players seem to think it does matter.
Bruce Jacobs said under Taiwan's previous pro-China president, Ma Ying-jeou, there was an informal diplomatic truce in the competition for global recognition. But that appears to have ended with the election of Tsai Ing-wen, who favors a more independent approach toward China. Last December, the tiny African island nation of Sao Tome and Principe switched from Taipei to Beijing. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. The Philippines says it learned of city siege plans in advance. Ivanka Trump urged to speak up after arrest of Chinese labor investigators. Indian tycoon Vijay Mallya in UK court fighting extradition. Thai police raid a click farm and find over 347,000 SIM cards. Chinese demand threatens South Africa's donkeys. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also direct you toward our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. House of Representatives Human Rights Commission co-chair is calling for China to show flexibility on Tibet and suggests a new U.S. policy is needed toward Tibet. Congressman Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, was among a congressional delegation recently in India to meet with the Dalai Lama. We hear a portion of his comments in an exclusive interview with VOA Mandarin reporters.
It's important that the U.S. has a new policy toward Tibet because the status quo isn't working. You know, a year and a half ago when the Chinese government let us into Tibet, I thought maybe that that was a signal that maybe they were going to reassess their policy and maybe be more reasonable when it came to dealing with the Tibetan question. But things have gotten worse. I mean, the oppression has gotten worse. We were in Nepal before visiting Dharamsala, and the Chinese government has put pressure on the Nepalese government not to allow Tibetan refugees to be registered, allowing them to be able to legally work and have businesses and travel freely. And so the Chinese government is just getting worse on a whole range of issues, jailing more and more Tibetans, in Tibet and in the Tibetan region. So I think we need to reassess and we need to understand that just talking the talk is not enough. We got to start walking the walk. And the Chinese government regularly restricts U.S. diplomats and U.S. citizens and journalists from access to Tibet. Yet when they come to the United States, they can travel freely anywhere they want to go. You know, no questions asked. What this basically says is we will treat you like you treat us. So if you're going to, reserve the right to restrict where we can go, well, then we will reserve that same right. And beyond that, I think we need to publicly pressure the Chinese government more on the issue of Tibet. This is a human rights issue that needs to be resolved. And, we should publicly call on the Chinese government to restart the direct dialogue that used to exist between the Chinese government and the Tibetan people. That needs to be restarted. The Chinese government should release all prisoners of conscience that they have in their jails, and I think the United States, needs to appoint a special coordinator on Tibet as soon as possible to help elevate these issues. We've also talked about working with other countries and establishing what we call a group of friends on Tibet who would meet regularly and publicly to assess the situation in Tibet and whether there's been progress or not. But I think the Chinese government thinks this issue will just go away. The Dalai Lama is in his 80s, and they think, well, at some point, he won't be around and everybody will forget. The reason why we went to meet with His Holiness is to make it clear to the Chinese government that we not only support His Holiness, we support the cause, and we're not going away. And this issue is not going to go away, and we're going to keep on bringing it up over and over and over again until there's some change. Let me just say this. I want a good relationship with China. China's an incredible country. I've visited there. The people are wonderful. Great history. China's one of the great powers of the world. They're doing great things on climate change. I support all that. I want a good relationship with China. But that doesn't mean that we ignore the human rights situation that affects so many Tibetans.
Our thanks to VOA Mandarin for sharing their exclusive interview with Congressman Jim McGovern following his visit with the Dalai Lama in India. There's more on the story at voanews.com. Happening now in Asia, President Donald Trump will host his newly elected South Korean counterpart Moon Jae-in in Washington later this month. The two leaders are expected to discuss strengthening their alliance and cooperation on global and economic issues and review North Korean nuclear and missile threats. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. Former National Basketball Association star Dennis Rodman has made a surprise return to North Korea, just as an American being held there was released. Wearing sunglasses and a dark shirt and baseball cap and with facial piercings, Rodman told reporters Tuesday that he's, quote, just trying to open the door after he was spotted at the Beijing International Airport en route to Pyongyang. The 56-year-old former basketball star has visited North Korea at least four times and has developed a friendship with its young leader, Kim Jong-un, who's an avid NBA fan and especially of the Michael Jordan-led championship Chicago Bulls team that Rodman was a part of in the 1990s. Rodman has said that in the past, his purpose of his trips has been to help open the door to the reclusive state. Anthony Ruggiero, a North Korea analyst and senior fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies in Washington, says Rodman's return to North Korea, even as a private citizen, has immediately raised concerns that he will be used as a pawn to bolster a sympathetic image of the Kim regime.
With Dennis Rodman's celebrity, I think it's bringing attention to Kim Jong-un that he doesn't deserve and that he shouldn't get.
Rodman's unofficial diplomacy, Ruggiero said, could also undermine international efforts to increase sanctions on Pyongyang for its continued nuclear and ballistic missiles programs and for its ongoing human rights violations. In the past, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter also came to North Korea to negotiate the release of Americans being detained. While Ruggiero hopes for their release, he said that the United States should ban all travel to North Korea to prevent the leadership in Pyongyang a means of leverage to influence public opinion or to extract concessions.
And it distracts from and it legitimizes North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. I mean, that's Kim Jong-un's goal. And why would he feed into that goal of his?
Currently, three Americans are being held in North Korea. Amid Rodman's arrival, word came of the release of 22-year-old student Otto Warmbier, who was detained in January 2016 and sentenced to 15 years hard labor for attempting to steal a propaganda banner. U.S. State Department spokesman Heather Nauert was pleased about the news of the release.
What an incredible day that one of our fellow American citizens who's been detained in North Korea for more than a year, and we had difficulty, as you all are very well aware, in reaching him. We had to go through the government of Sweden, our protective power, in order to get any kind of information, and even then, it was extremely rare. So we are grateful today that he is released and he is on his way back to the United States.
Asked about U.S. citizens detained in North Korea, Rodman told reporters at Beijing's international airport that he thinks he can, quote, make something happen. But Nauert said Wambier's release was not connected to Rodman's arrival in Pyongyang.
That is correct that Dennis Rodman had nothing to do with the release of Mr. Warmbier.
Rodman may have played a key role in gaining the 2014 release of American missionary Kenneth Bay, who was charged with hostile acts against the state and spent 2 years in a North Korean labor camp. Rodman also has a connection to U.S. President Donald Trump, having appeared twice on the Celebrity Apprentice television program that Trump hosted. Trump has at times indicated a willingness to negotiate with Kim Jong-un, but the president has also described the North Korean leaders as a madman with nuclear weapons. From Seoul, VOA's Brian Padden and Yuomi Kim sent much of this report to us, while we also acknowledge VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching for her contributions. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Heavy rains have triggered landslides in Bangladesh that killed at least 43 people. Officials warn the death toll could rise as rescuers reach more areas of the hilly districts in the southeastern part of the country. The mud buried homes after the rain started on Monday. VOA Asia Facebook is your source for news and features. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Vietnamese-American Christopher Larson learned he was not a U.S. citizen when he was in a Washington state prison serving time for kidnapping, and he was confronted with the possibility of deportation. He was in his early 40s and had never thought of himself as anything but a U.S. citizen. Larson is one of thousands of foreign nationals adopted by American parents who do not have U.S. citizenship status. VOA's Aline Barrows tells us that this is because their parents did not follow through on naturalization.
With the end of the Vietnam War in 1975, President Gerald Ford ordered the evacuation of Vietnamese orphans during the mission known as Operation Baby Lift. 4-year-old Christopher Larson was one of those children. He was adopted by an American military family. He was raised into what he calls an all-American family.
I would say my life was the typical kid that was raised in Alaska, always in the outdoors, always with family. To me, it was the perfect life.
Larson attended university and embarked on an IT career. In time, he got married, had 2 children, and moved to Seattle. After a difficult time in his marriage, followed by a drinking binge, Larson's wife took the children and left.
And that kind of drove me over the deep end, and I decided that I would have a suicide by cop, and I did that by kidnapping somebody else.
He kidnapped a 9-year-old and then called her parents to demand money. A Washington state judge sentenced Larson to 12 years in prison, and that's where U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement found him.
They told me that I would lose my job in prison. I wouldn't be able to do any educational services in prison. Basically, all the rights that a typical inmate would have, I ended up losing because I was told that I have an order of deportation.
To the American government, Larson was an undocumented Vietnamese national with a criminal record.
My family were like, there's no way you have an order of deportation. You're adopted. You're a citizen. You've been in our family since 75.
But the government says his family failed to apply for Larson's citizenship. An estimated 35,000 foreign nationals adopted by American parents do not have U.S. citizenship status because their parents didn't follow through on naturalization.
They knew, but the process was so expensive or so cumbersome, and they had already gone through a pretty extensive and expensive adoption process, so they just didn't do it. Or 3, that adoptees have been placed in abusive households, and so their adoptive parents just didn't do it.
Belcour says in 2001, Congress passed a law giving automatic citizenship to adoptees from other countries. The legislation, however, only applies to people born after 1983. To fill in the loophole, the Adoptee Rights Campaign is behind the Adoptee Citizenship Act. The bill stalled in Congress last year, but advocates are working to reintroduce the law. Out of prison, Larson has not been deported yet, because Vietnam will not take its citizens who came to the U.S. before 1995.
Now I'm stuck. I can't leave U.S. soil.
Aline Barrows, so VOA News, Seattle, Washington.
Developing at this hour in Asia, rights activists are urging China to give labor activists more room to freely expose labor rights violations. So far, the Chinese government has refused to release activists investigating a factory making Ivanka Trump brand shoes and has accused them of using illegal monitoring devices. VOA Asia Facebook has all the big stories throughout the day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, music is as much about math as it is about sound. It's also about imagination and learning, but it's out of reach for some disabled or physically challenged students until now. VOA's Kevin Enix reports a team of Polish inventors has created a push-button instrument that almost anyone can play.
This is the Musicon, and it turns anyone who can push a button into a composer.
The key issue of Musicon is its simplicity. We have the buttons which launch mechanisms after pressing. The mechanisms are completely mobile. We can shift them and a child can control everything that is happening here. We can design different other add-ons and include them in the kit.
Some psychologists have latched onto the Musicon as a therapy tool for autistic children, such as these kids with Asperger's syndrome.
Children have almost unlimited possibilities of experimenting with sounds, translating their imaginations to the instrument, or acting with the instrument. It is very important that there is no possibility of failure, that they can freely experiment in their own way, and the one and only important thing is what I want to do with the Musicon, and not what rules or norms impose on me.
Its creators are very aware of its potential as a tool for learning, and not just as a tool for making music.
We
constantly work together with different therapists, specialists, experts on different fields on the Musicon, and it is very interesting that we see a Musicon method emerging, which is an entire system how to educate children with the help of music.
The company is currently raising money to get the Musicon into full production. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Computer gamers have been waiting for this one. The Electronic Entertainment Expo underway this week in Los Angeles. As VOA's Asia's David Byrd tells us, the convention brings together the top names in gaming with sequels to popular franchises expected to dominate the show.
More than 250 exhibitors and 2,500 products will be featured at the E3 show, which is taking over the Los Angeles Convention Center this week. One thing generating buzz at this year's show is Microsoft's new gaming console based on its Project Scorpio code. Microsoft says the Xbox One X console will be its most powerful ever, offering gamers better graphics, even if they don't have a 4K television. CNET's executive editor Ian Scher agrees.
We're going to even see that from Microsoft. They're going to have a new device, a new Xbox, that's just going to be bigger. It's going to be all these other things that it can do, and it's going to give us games that supposedly are even much better looking. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how far they can push this, right? At what point have they kind of finished making everything better and they just start building better games?
The console is expected to be released worldwide on November 7th and cost about $500 in the United States. Microsoft is hoping the Xbox One X will help it overtake Sony's PlayStation, which has outsold Microsoft's console since both were launched in 2013. Ian Scher says that Sony's studios have helped it design and produce games that give players more of what they're looking for.
You've got games like The Last of Us and all these other Uncharted and all these other games that are just really capture people's imaginations and really get them going. And Microsoft just doesn't have it in the same way. They have a few. Halo is a big game, but it's not enough, clearly. And so the big thing for them, Scorpio is going to definitely make it so that their technology is competitive. Great. The next step is games.
No sacrifice too great.
Welcome to the Bloody First. You're a long way from Texas, farm boy.
Fran Mirabella III is with IGN Entertainment, which focuses on games, films, entertainment, and technology. He says that fans and industry insiders can look for a lot of sequels at this year's E3.
Super Mario, Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty, because these things sell. Gaming is still a business. It's not that gamers don't want something different, but like when you go see movies or anything else, you're hesitant to try something new. But you also crave what you know works well. And so there's some really good stuff that's working, and just it's the way games work, and you're never going to not see this happen.
However, Mirabella says that gamers can also look for some new offerings, like the pirate game Sea of Thieves. Last year, games, including mobile-based games, generated $91 billion in revenue. Gamers spent $6.6 billion on downloads to their consoles. PC gaming earned $34 billion. Some of those players might even get into this year's E3 show. It's usually an industry-only affair, but for the first time, the convention is offering about 15,000 tickets to dedicated gamers. The E3 show runs until June 15th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Whether you're off to play computer games or you have other plans for the day, we're glad you spent part of it with us listening to VOA Asia. A very special hello to all of our friends in Myanmar listening on Facebook. VOA Burmese is the place to go there. Thank you so much for joining us. You can also write to us. We'd love to hear from you. We have our VOA Asia Facebook page where you can send us a message, and our email is voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Jim Harmon, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.